You're listening to the Local News Hour. I'm Roger Goldman. Coming up, we're going to speak with the new pastor of the St. Mary's Catholic Church, Father Das. Then Councilmember Tanatoli will stop by with an update of last night's council meeting. And we're going to finish our hour by talking Live PC, Give PC with Brandy Connolly of the Park City Community Foundation. A landowner won't get to build a road to their landlocked property across the 910 cattle ranch. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports a judge said what she was asking for would wreak havoc across Utah.
As far as anyone can tell, David Bernalfo didn't know there was a small landlocked parcel sandwiched between the 910 cattle ranch he bought in 1992 and Salt Lake County. Brianne Krizziak bought the 23-acre lot in 2016 and 6 years later sued Bernalfo for access to it via a Jeep trail that connects to East Canyon Road. Soon after, Summit County cut a $55 million deal to preserve the ranch as open space. Krizziak's lawsuit claims she's entitled to get her property by way of the 910, otherwise she can't put it to use. Third District Judge Richard Mrozek didn't see it that way in court Wednesday and denied Krizziak's claim to an easement.
This was a super interesting issue. I make this ruling with a maximum humility. I could not fairly predict what an appellate court would do.
The parties were haggling over a decades-old and obscure paper trail of foreclosures and defaulted loans. At some point, Krizziak's attorney said either 1978 or 1988, the 23-acre parcel got separated from the rest of the ranch while it was changing hands. Now that Bernalfo is selling to Summit County, the county agreed to handle the lawsuit. What the county pointed out is there wasn't a handy electronic map of all the land back in 1992 like there is now. There weren't parcel numbers back then either. Property was described on paper with physical distances and landmarks as it had since Old England, using meets and bounds. Summit County says Bernalfo couldn't be expected to notice that 23 acres were missing from a meets and bounds description of his ranch. The ranch's previous owner didn't tell him about any Jeep trail or the parcel when he bought it. Mrozek ruled that Bernalfo's interest in his land outweighed Krizziak's interest in accessing the parcel she bought years later.
To rule otherwise would create absolute havoc in the state of Utah. It would require purchasers of property to do an exhaustive title search and potentially survey and map analysis to determine whether there are any landlocked parcels out there somewhere that were once upon a time unified with the property that they're purchasing, and then to eliminate the possibility that that implied reservation or grant of an easement by necessity still existed or had otherwise been withdrawn by intent of parties who may be dead, gone, hundreds of years removed.
Krizziak has 30 days to appeal the ruling after Mrozek issues it in writing. Summit County has not closed on the 910 ranch. That's been delayed in part because a $40 million federal grant for the project is caught up in the ongoing government shutdown. Summit County is a financial supporter of KPCW. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
And the Park City High School girls cross country team ran its way to a state title on Tuesday. KPCW's Grace Dorfler reports.
After three hard-fought miles, Park City's girls' cross-country team took home its first state championship win in a decade. For the seven girls on the varsity team, the win was the culmination of a season of hard work.
Everyone just worked so hard this season, so it was, like, fun to see the results actually play out.
That's senior Paige Wagner. She and her teammates bested Desert Hills High School by just 4 points for the team victory. Sophomore Tatum Flack came in second overall, flying through the course in 17 minutes, 51 seconds. She says she raced with the rest of her team in mind.
My team's back there and they're working just as hard as me. And so I need to like do it for them too.
The girls say they've trained to work together through the races, pushing each other to run better. Here's senior Ava Shewell.
This year especially, we had such a big group of runners who are so similar in times to each other, and I think just having that group of people who are also such good friends to be able to run like that all together just made a huge difference.
Wagner agreed. She says even more than hearing people cheering along the course, having friends to run with makes all the difference.
Like if Sonia decides to push up a hill, then we all kind of do the same, and I think that speaks a lot louder than anything anyone says to me on the course.
The seniors on varsity say winning the state championship is the perfect way to end 4 years of cross country. Coach Steve Katita says he's proud to see his team succeed.
But I know how hard they've worked and how much it means to them. I know how much, you know, they want this thing. And so to see them happy and excited after, you know, weeks, months, years of hard work is really satisfying.
He also commended the four women who serve as the team's assistant coaches and as strong role models for the girls.
I just think that was really empowering for our girls team to see, like, these women showing up every day, even though they had jobs and they had kids and they had pregnancies. And I think that was kind of our secret weapon this year, to be honest.
For FLAC and senior Sonia Preston, the season is not yet over. They're heading to Nike Cross Regionals Southwest in late November in Mesa, Arizona. There, they'll compete against the best runners from Arizona, Colorado, Nevada, New Mexico, and Utah. The top five individual finishers will make it to Nike Cross Nationals. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
St. Mary's Catholic Church in Park City recently welcomed a new priest, Father Arokia Das. He joins me in the studio this morning. Father Das, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
So, Father Das, can you share a bit about your background and sort of the career path that first led you into the priesthood and then led you to Park City?
Of course. I was born and raised in India, where faith and family are part of everyday life. I was ordained a Catholic priest there in India. And after 4 years of ministry, God brought me all the way to Utah. Quite a change from tropical weather.
I would guess so.
to snow boots and ski jackets. Over the years, I served in several parishes across the Diocese of Salt Lake City. And every place has taught me something about people's deep desire for meaning and hope. This year is called the Year of Hope, the Jubilee Year. When Bishop asked me to come to Park City, I said no. you will have to think about it. But Bishop gave me 2 years to think about it and pray about it. And finally, you know, as Catholic priests, we give our vows to obedience to Bishop. So I said yes finally and then came here.
Why were you reluctant to come up here?
Because I left the previous parish.
Oh, where was your previous parish?
I was in Price, Notre Dame, the Lourdes Catholic Church, which is 102 years old now. I did the centennial celebration for almost a year. So I served there for 6 years. Technically, that was my very first parish as pastor. Mm-hmm. So I love the people, love the community, simple, quiet. So that was the only reason, nothing else. And finally, I came here, yes. This community is diverse, welcoming, and always searching for the sacred, even in the middle of busy daily life. And like every priest, my main mission is simple, to save souls. The church's final canon is 1752, which goes like this, Salus Animarum Suprema Lex, that means salvation of soul is the supreme law of the church. So everything we do, you know, as priest, every mass, every act of service flows from that. My goal is to help people meet Christ and rediscover peace. So yes, I came to Park City, not just to serve a parish, but to help souls find their way home to God. And I'll admit, doing that 7,000 feet keeps me both humble and slightly out of breath.
So it's interesting, like, how would you describe the different parts of your job? I mean, you do a number of different things as a parish priest, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, as a priest, you need to be jack of all trade, master of nothing.
I doubt that.
Yes. We are 24/7 available, so that makes it easy. If a priest is married, then it's difficult. So we are available 24/7. He's single. It's a necessity. It makes it easy. When you're ready to give 24/7, we can manage.
But tell me, just so our listeners can understand, I mean, obviously you celebrate masses several times a week. You do counseling. Give people a sense of your job functions, right, for people who are not that familiar.
Yeah, our ministry is not just pastoral. A parish like St. Mary's is sometimes administrative. A lot of people work under me. So and also Faith in Action, lots of charity programs we have. So it's integral, and it is also in a way helpful because we give our obedience to the bishop and we don't do what we want to do. So we do what we are asked to do and we follow the rules, yes. Mm-hmm. That's one thing about the Catholic Church is the Catholic priest follow rules.
Now, you mentioned that you have a number of people working under you. How large, let's talk a little bit about the community that you serve. You know, how big is the congregation and how many, sort of professionals work to keep the church going?
St. Mary's is one of the most active parishes in Utah. We have about 3,000 families. That's a lot of souls and a lot of espresso. We need to run the parish. So we serve two main locations, our Old Town Chapel right in downtown Park City, and our main church on Route 224, surrounded by beautiful mountains, beautiful mountain views that make every sunrise feel like a blessing.
It is a gorgeous location, yes. with that open field beside it.
Yes. I'm blessed to have Father Persad. He's my associate. Associate pastor. We work together closely and also serve St. Lawrence Mission in Heber City.
I was going to ask you that. So is that a separate congregation or is that a separate location? How does that
work? It's a mission to Park City.
Okay.
So our parish family really stretches across the whole Wasatch back. And here's something special. St. Mary's is the only parish in Utah that offers a traditional Latin Mass every Sunday.
So you do three languages, I assume. You do Latin, you do English, you also do Spanish service as well?
I do know Latin, but I don't do the service. We need traditional Latin Mass is approved only by certain priests in the diocese. Only two priests, I think, in my experience I have known, can do Latin Mass in the whole state of Utah. So one is Father Christopher Gray, the previous pastor. Another one is Father Rick. Eric. So when Father Christopher goes on vacation or goes somewhere else, he comes and helps. So, this is the only parish in the whole state of Utah where we have traditional Latin Mass on Sunday. I can celebrate Latin Mass, but I don't have the permission to do it. Alongside our English and Spanish Masses, that's what we do, Latin Mass. And we also have a good number of Hispanic families. We have one Spanish Mass, and at least 350 people regularly come for Sunday Spanish Masses. So, yes, our parish is big.
That is quite an operation. And the downtown location, the one down here in downtown Park City, what is that primarily used for?
We do it for wedding Masses. Most of the time, wedding takes place. And it is also a place for prayer. It is open from morning 6 to evening 6. Anybody can go and sit down and then pray. So it's more like a place of prayer right now. But during summer, we also have Masses there. And sometimes traditional Latin Masses, when it happens with other times, for example, evenings on Sundays, we have confirmation Masses. So we move to Old Town Chapel. So traditional Latin Mass sometimes take place in Old Town Chapel.
So, Father Das, what do you see as the biggest challenges facing your church here in Park City and, frankly, around the world?
I think one big challenge is helping people reconnect faith with daily life. The world moves fast. Everyone is busy with work, phones, and family. But sometimes we forget to feed our souls. People are spiritually hungry. They just don't always know where to begin. Here in Park City, we are responding with programs that make faith real. Youth activities, family retreats, service projects, and even outdoor prayer events. Faith isn't something that stays in the church building. It belongs on the ski slopes, in homes, and at dinner tables. On a bigger scale, the church faces the same mission to remind people that faith is not about rules, it's about relationship with God, with one another, and with creation. When people discover that connection, they don't just believe, they belong.
And so you mentioned, you know, different kinds of programs. I know that it's been, I'm stammering a little bit. I understand that your church, like most organized religion in this country, are facing an issue with young people. Sort of, how do you keep and attract young people? How do you have young participation? What do you do about that?
We are trying to start new programs for our young people. One such program is called Templars. Very soon we are going to bring that program. And we, in the Catholic Church, we have confirmation classes, so there they are forced to come. At least 200 plus people every Sunday I see. So we wanted to help their faith to grow by having a relationship with God that they can turn to God always, no matter what. What is necessary for them, I think what they need is relationship, good relationship with God as a Father. So we want to focus on that, stressing and helping, being a bridge to have a relationship that they can build with God. Yeah. All the programs, yes, we need those, but mm-hmm. the ultimate goal is to help them to have a good relationship with God.
And I think you mentioned that you do some social programs. Can you talk a little bit about what role you see the church playing in terms of the community and social programming?
So we have lots of social programs. For example, every Tuesday from noon to 4 p.m., I'm talking about charity programs.
Right.
Food bank at the Old Town Chapel from noon to 4 p.m. We always open. Anyone can come, no questions asked, and pick up essentials, food, baby diapers, hygiene products, or even just a friendly smile. We also have programs.
I want to stop in there for just a minute. With the current activities that are going on, the current potential for, well, the actual cut and snap food benefits, are you expecting an uptick in your demand at the food pantry?
Yes, we are. You know, when SNAP's St. Mary's step in, we are prepared, and we are our people are very, very generous. So most of the groceries that we have is from people they themselves buy and then they give to us. So we also have other programs like Gabriel Project. It supports expectant moms with baby supplies and care. And yeah, we have a lot of programs.
Okay, and if people are interested, you know, I know there's a lot of concern in the community about the food situation. People are interested in contributing to your food bank, and how could they go about doing that?
So there are so many ways. You can give food, money, or time. All three are acts of love. If you are at the store, grab an extra bag of rice or canned goods and drop it in the church. If you like online giving, visit stmaryspoxcity.com and click Give. And if you really want to feel the joy, come volunteer. The laughter from our Tuesday team could light up half of Park City. It's a gospel in motion. Jesus didn't say, feed the poor if you have leftovers. He said, you give them something to eat. Mark chapter 6, verse 37. So that's what we try to do, one bag, one diaper, one smile at a time.
So a mission like that sort of relates to, you know, part of a core teaching of the church, I take it.
Yes, it is. Yeah. As Mother Teresa said, whatever you do to others, you did it to me. So, yes, when we help the poor help us.
Okay, Father Das, I guess I wanted to ask you one other question, which is, this year we had a new pope. Do you anticipate that that will change things in a material way for the church?
Every pope brings his own gifts, but the mission never changes, to share Christ's love with the world. I think the new pope will continue what Pope Benedict XVI and Pope Francis started, a church that listens, welcomes, and walks with people. We call that synodality. It's a fancy word that really means journeying together. I also expect a strong call to live the gospel through actions, showing mercy, compassion, and justice. As I tell my parishioners, people may not read the Bible, but they will read you. Mm. So let's make sure that they see what they see is joy, kindness, and faith in action.
Father Rokia Das, thanks so much for spending time with us this morning.
Thank you so much.
We'll be right back after this. KPCW News time is now 8:31. You're listening to the Local News Hour. I'm Roger Goldman, and joining me now in the studio, after what appears to have been a rather late night with the Park City Council, we have Council Member Tana Tolley. Good morning, Tana.
Good morning, Roger. Thanks for having me this morning.
How late did you guys go last night?
I think that we were there till about 11 p.m., so it was almost an eight-hour meeting.
And what's the record? What's the latest during your term?
I think this might be it. I think maybe this was the latest we've gone, maybe a little bit after. But yeah, going till 11 is not normal.
We have a winner. Well, before we get to what happened at the meeting, let's talk a little bit about something else that happened this week. I think there was an election, and I believe that you have an apparent first place finish. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. I'm so honored to have been reelected to Park City Council and to serve another term. And it's just a complete honor. I'm so grateful to the community and so grateful to this town that raised me. And I look forward to the next 4 years because they're going to be some of the most important years we have going forward.
You know, I do want to talk about that a little bit. They are an important 4 years because they take us into the period of, 5 years until the Olympics. So what, you know, if we're sitting here 4 years from now and I'm asking you, Tana, what did you get done that you wanted to get done? What's the answer that you want to be able to give me?
Well, first and foremost, I want to have the senior center done. That has been one of my top priorities. And to really start focusing on some of these regional transportation solutions that we need to work through as the Wasatch back. And we do have some low-hanging fruit transit solutions that I think we can implement in the next couple of years. And that's things like flex lanes and park and rides that are ready to go right now. But I think one of the big things we're going to want to do is ensure that our partnerships have remained strong and key to everything that we do. And that's with the resorts, with the state, with the county, and continuing to ensure that this is a great place for families to live and for locals to thrive, and also ensure that our economy is strong and that we still move forward with ensuring that Park City is still a place people want to come and visit and they find it easy to get in and out of, and they find it a wonderful place to tell their friends about. And that's really important because, our export here in town is nature, and that's what we sell. So we want to make sure that we protect that as well.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about what happened last night. You just mentioned the senior center. Did that come up at last night's meeting?
It did. We had a lot of really amazing projects on our agenda last night. But the senior center came to us. It's in the design phase right now, and we are working very closely with two members of the senior center on that project. It's going to be on the Mawinney lot. And for those that don't know, that's the lot that's across the street from the library. We were given three options that included talking through the open space and talking through the parking. So three different scenarios. Each of them had a price tag as well. One is the surface, so that would just be surface parking, and that is the cheapest option.
Then how many cars would that be able to accommodate?
That one would have been about around 51.
So we're losing a bunch of spaces that are now currently, I would call it, overflow library and skateboard parking. So how many spaces are in the Mawinney
lot? Well, Mawinney lot right now has 47 spots.
Okay.
And so we're actually going to gain some in all three options.
Okay.
So we had an underground one where all parking would go underground. Obviously, that's the most expensive. That piece
and
of
the
property.
Most attractive.
Yeah, and that piece of property used to be a car dealership. When I was a kid, it was my bus stop, and there was a car dealership. And I've been told by some of our old timers that it's also a place where a lot of soils had been dumped. And so as we start digging in this community,
we're going to put the seniors in the contaminated soil.
So we will have to do some cleanup. And as you start digging, every time you dig in this town, you find something. And so the price tag always gets more expensive as you build underground parking. So the council was kind of all over the board in which one that they wanted to move forward with, but we did come up with at least a footprint. So this is not a square footage. This is a footprint of 7,500 square feet. And we also asked to move forward. The majority of council wanted to look at the hybrid parking option, mm-hmm. Which would be partially underground, partially using some surface parking. So they'll come back to us with those options. They'll also come back to us to talk through the full square footage.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, what still has to be determined, it sounds like, is what are you going to put upstairs?
Yes,
how big an upstairs are you going to build? Okay. And what's the process for that? When do you think that one will be driven to a conclusion?
A conclusion.
I always ask the shovels in the ground.
The
question.
Shovels in the ground. You know, we're looking at 2027 for shovels in the ground on that one.
Okay. Okay. There was a lot of discussion last night about Clark Ranch.
There was.
Okay. Let's try to break down what the agenda item was.
Okay. So the agenda. So I'm going to try to make this a little bit simple.
It is complicated.
Simple.
Yes.
We have Clark Ranch, which is an area that we wanted to talk about putting a conservation easement on. For the last 10 years, that piece of property has also included carving off about 10 acres that we are calling Steve's Point so that we don't get confused on what we're talking about. Last night was not to talk about the housing project, though that did come up quite a bit from the public. It was to talk about about 97 to 98% of the open space area. It looks like people are ready to have some fun in here.
We've got creatures dressed in Live PC, Give PC costumes. We'll get to Live PC after we talk about Clark Ranch a little more.
But so what we're really looking at last night was this debate about it's approximately about 3% of the 344 acres, and so that's what we're talking about. Is we wanted to carve out a specific portion of it, but the rest of it, we definitely want to go under this conservation easement. And I think that's the most important thing here, is that we are conserving this huge swath of land that was bought in order for us to have this entry corridor that was open space there.
And just to interrupt for a minute, describe to people where it is. I think most people know, as you're coming in, if you're coming from Camas into Park City, right, it would be on the left side before you get to 40?
Left and right.
Okay.
So I think it's easier to think of 40, and it's on both sides of you. So it's on the Richardson Flat side, and it's next to Park City Heights.
Okay.
Yes. We're very excited. All of council has a consensus that they want to put this conservation easement on as soon as possible. Some more questions came up last night, and so we weren't able to move forward with a decision, but we are committed to getting it done as quickly as possible, and it is one of the projects I've been most excited about getting done, so looking forward to
that. And once that is done, the conservation is in on a separate, and I wouldn't call it parallel path, the housing issue needs to be resolved, I take it.
Yes, and we are continuing to, we have what's called an exclusive negotiating agreement with the Alexander Company to build housing there, and we're continuing on that process and continuing to have conversations with them at this time.
And again, any sense for how long it's going to take to resolve the housing issue?
Roger, you asked the best questions. I don't right now. I know that our team's still working with them, and there's a lot of questions that still have to be answered, and there's still a lot of questions that the council has about the project. We haven't even actually seen the full project to us either. So lots more to come on this. It's not completely finished, and we will continue down that process.
And again, one of the attractive things about that, I take it, is that it would provide another swath of affordable or attainable housing, right?
Yeah, you know, one of the things I was really excited about for this project was the ability to have attainable for sale units in that area, and to also have, you know, we know we have a huge need for affordable and attainable housing in this community. We have so many competing priorities, but I will say that there is not it's not a competition between open space and affordable housing. They can both exist, and they can both coexist together, and they're two passions that I have, and so I spend a lot of time thinking about them and thinking about how they can all work together.
You know, you mentioned something that I think is an interesting tension, and that is, what's your perspective in terms of modeling between a purchase housing and rental housing? Do you think there's room for both, or do you think one model is better than the other?
I think that at this point, it really depends on the developer and the type of project it is. The reason that I like this for Clark Ranch was that
for the
Steve's Point. Yeah, the purchase option is because we know the developer is going to be there. We are giving them the land. They are leasing the land from the city. So if there are any issues with the product that they sell to the consumer, they are the ones that are responsible. What we've seen happen in some of the other cases in Park City is the developer who built these no longer is in business, and so we don't know who's responsible for what's happened down the road. So this, though, gives us someone who is actually responsible and would be working with the people that they sold the properties to.
Okay. You know, we can have a broader discussion on the overall sort of philosophy around this that goes beyond the narrow what happens if they go bankrupt. I think there's a vibrant debate about that, but we won't do that today. Let's talk about the other sort of potential housing issue, which is, I do want to touch on the Arts and Culture District, which I know was supposed to come up, but I take it didn't happen as much as one would expect because it was already 10:30.
Yeah, it was a very robust agenda. We had what we thought might be our last conversation with the Bryn Shore group on what's going to go in the 5-acre parcel. Unfortunately, as you mentioned, it came very late in the evening, and we did give them a little bit of direction. We did not get to the most important thing for us, though, which was the financial model and talking through how much it's going to cost the city and what the overall cost will be for the whole entire project, not just what you see through the development. So it will be coming back to us to discuss the financial part. We still have some questions regarding how much commercial is enough commercial, how much local vibrancy wants to exist on that property. There's some competing differences on council on what's the most important. Is it housing? Is it local vibrant elements for the locals who live here now versus the locals that will live there? There's a big question on if we want to build a parking garage that's two layers. And so we still have some more needs and some more questions that need to be asked through that process. So they'll be back to us hopefully in the next month, because we are trying to have a pretty hefty timeline to get them through. And we did decide that we do want to move forward with this art space, which is a performing arts space, which I think is really fantastic for that area and something that is missing from Park City right now.
Would that be an outdoor performing arts space?
It's an indoor one. There's actually one on the Westminster campus. It looks like that if you ever see that. But it would have an outdoor space around it that could be used in the summertime. But no, this would be an indoor facility.
And when you mentioned the financials, it seems to me that there are certain sort of inexorable issues here, which is you have to have enough housing and you have to have enough market rate housing to make the project pencil out. And on the other hand, you don't want three giant Soviet style apartment buildings. How do you sort of work through that tension?
Right. Well, we've moved ourselves away from that three Soviet building type of modeling. Right now, I believe. Gosh, I hope I get this right. I think it's seven smaller buildings right now. One of the things that we've been talking about is the height. And they had come back with all of it three stories, one building four stories. I personally would like to see all of it at three stories, but that is also a competing need of where do you put the affordable housing, where do you put the commercial. So that still needs to be talked through. And then also, if it goes to Planning Commission, will Planning Commission pass that fourth story as well? So we do still have those questions at large, but you're right. There's a lot of competing interest in that area.
It sounds like the kind of complicated math problem I could never solve on my own, which between these different options and the different financial issues associated with them. Tana, other issues that came up last night that you want to touch on?
Yeah, I do want to let the public know that UDOT came in as well, and they will, in the next 3 or 4 days on their website, they will have their plan for the I-40 corridor study. And some of the big points that they brought up to us is that basically it's going to be all segments of I-40 will fail in the next 10 years. And so what they want to do is try to create an area that doesn't have to be the main street for everything. So they're calling I-40 the main street for everything. So what they want to do is start using frontage roads. So frontage roads everywhere from the I-80 interchange down to, I think it's River Road in Heber. So, you know, one of the things that's really important that the community understands is they've come in and said that they really would like to look at the frontage roads that run right off of 248 towards Deer Valley, and then towards Richardson Flat, on the other side, on the west side or the east side of the road. So they're also looking at interchanges that would perhaps put off ramps in that area. They're looking at expanding to three lanes as you get further down past Deer Valley East. And there's just going to be quite a few more things that they want to do. They're upgrading the Mayflower interchange as well. They'll have a Diamond interchange south of Richardson Flat Road. So anyway, there's so much that came to us. It was one big presentation. We didn't have time for a lot of questions, but their website in the next 3 or 4 days will have updated information.
They'll have everyone. It on their website. Will you have it on yours also in terms of people that would
Yeah, we
it?
Can link to that as well. I think it's really important. But as a reminder, these are UDOT roads, and they do have right-of-way in many of the areas that we're talking about.
So Tana, if they build a road, a frontage road next to 40, would that take the place of the $700,000 road that was being contemplated to get to Park Ranch or Clark Ranch?
Yeah,
I got that wrong.
We did ask that question. We don't want two roads
exactly,
there.
Exactly.
So we would have to work with them on deciding how that would all work together. But it would just be a two-lane road. They also showed a bike path in there. And a buffer between development and the freeway.
I suppose it would be nice to get UDOT to pay for it.
That's one of the things we asked as well. Yeah.
Okay, anything else you want to touch on before
we
go?
No, just happy Live PC, Give PC.
And I wanted to ask you about that. It is Live PC, Give PC Day. We're about to have a giant orange dinosaur come into the studio with us.
Phenomenal.
What are some of your favorites?
Well, I've always been really passionate about our history. So Friends of Ski Mountain Mining History has always been one of my favorites, and same with Summit Lands. And of course, Peace House, and one of the things I think we'll see a lot this year is that there's a need in our community for safety and welfare. And I think those are ones that I want to be able to donate to as well. So looking forward to today, and I hope they raise even more than their goal.
All right. Tana Tolley of the Park City Council, thanks for spending time with us this morning. KPCW News Time is now 8:49. And it is Live PC, Give PC Day. And here in the studio, we have Deidre Walsh, Deidre Walsh Brandley, Connolly of the Park City Community Foundation, and we have the Live PC, Give PC Unicorn. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here. So, Deidre, why is Live PC, Give PC something that's important? Deidre Walsh is, of course, the CEO of the Park City Mountain Resort. Is that the right title?
I am the COO of Park City Mountain, and I'm also a proud board member for the Community Foundation. And I love this morning, driving into town, seeing already folks out with the signs, honking at our nonprofit partners that are there really hoping to raise money today to support their causes. It's just great energy for the community.
What's the target target for today's raise?
We have a $5.15 million raise goal today, and the more important part is 7,150 donors coming out and supporting the community. And this is all the 15s are for the 15th year of Live PC, Give PC. This is our 15th anniversary.
You know, it's funny, I clicked on this morning and it looked like things are well underway. There was quite a bit of money that had already been raised. Where are we right now?
We're over 30% of the way there. We are at 1.6, it ticks as I do this, $1.67 million so far, and over 2,160 donors so far.
Wow.
So Rebecca, aka the unicorn, can we hear you? I can't tell.
Happy Live PC,
Give PC. Get in closer if you can. So will you be out on the street corner jumping up and down later this morning?
I'm heading to the library after this, and I'll be at the library later on today for our parties and at High West tonight.
So let's talk about those parties. We finish off the day with some celebrations. And this year, for the first time, as I understand it, there's a family-oriented celebration that's centered at the library at Lucky Ones.
This is not the first year. We've done it a couple of times, but there is a family celebration this afternoon, starting around 4 p.m. At the library. And the goal is that the kids and parents and everyone can come out, especially since school's out today. People are looking for something to do with their kids. Bring them out to the library. We'll have food trucks, some different activities. And it's a good way to teach your kids about giving and kindness in our community.
You know, it's funny you should say that, because many years ago when my children were young, we had a ritual on New Year's Eve, which is we would drive around with checks, because this is physically, we would drive around with checks and go to the various not-for-profits that we wanted to donate to with our year-end giving. And it's interesting because that has struck a note in them, because they still talk about that they want to impart that to their children. So Live PC, Give PC is a chance for our community to demonstrate to our children the importance of giving back.
Yeah, I was just going to add to that, Roger. When we talk about how we can grow unique donors, this is a great example of how you can include your entire household. So unique donor is by a unique email address. So I have two kids and a husband, and so all four of us can donate to different nonprofits or the same nonprofit, and we count as four unique donors. So it's a great way for the whole family to be involved.
Yeah, and Roger, to add to that, I mean, I have three kids. Every year, just like you did with your kids, right? My kids literally have a cup that they set aside parts of their allowance, and they woke up yesterday and they were like, tomorrow I'm going to give, and they had their full list of who they were giving to and how much money they were giving to, and they were so excited to give back to this community that gives to them.
So Brandon, let's talk about the breadth. I mean, there are more than 100 not-for-profits that are on the list. Was it 130, something like
there
that?
There are over 140 this 40. Year. It's the largest pool we've had. And on top of the nonprofits themselves, then we also have these, I'll call them spirit organizations, but clubs at the high school and different people who operate under the umbrella of a nonprofit organization that are in there as well. So many opportunities to give.
And let's talk about, you know, something really important. Let's talk about leaderboards. Okay, I mean, one of the things that makes this so much fun is this low-key competition. What are some, and are the leaderboards divided by category?
I'll talk a little bit about the main leaderboard. So Park City Mountain, we've been supporting this day for 15 years. So since the very inception of Live PC, Give PC, in those last 15 years, $35 million have been raised. One of the ways that we've been able to be involved, it's to sponsor the main leaderboard. So if you think about that, it's a way to really boost your giving. So for that main leaderboard, prizes include $1,250 for first place, $1,000 for second place, and $750 for third place. And that's really about for all the organizations involved, the number of unique donors. So it's a great way to drive the unique donorship and also boost those nonprofits.
And I want to give you the opportunity, Brandy, to thank the other large sponsors of Live PC, Give PC.
Yeah, so we have, I mean, Vail Epic Promise is amazing. You know, they do a lot for our community, and they obviously do a lot for Live PC, Give PC. You can see their logo on my sleeve.
you're wearing your heart on your sleeve.
I'm wearing my heart on my sleeve right now, right? And praying for snow. The other ones, you know, we have our People and Community Leaderboard that's sponsored by Slopeside Village. We have our Sports and Rec Leaderboard sponsored by Woodward. We have our Education Leaderboard sponsored by JP Morgan Chase. An Environmental and Animals Leaderboard sponsored by Blue Sky. Our Mental and Physical Health Leaderboard is sponsored by the Canyons Village Management Association. Arts and Culture are sponsored by the Berglund family. And then, of course, we have the Small But Mighty Leaderboard. This is a new one for this year, but it's targeted at those smaller nonprofits who maybe, you know, aren't mountain trails who are going to get all of these big donors, but they're newer. So Park City Reads or the Senior Center are a great example of these. And that's sponsored by High West. And, of course, High West also throws our party tonight that everybody can come out to. If there's a line, you know, there are other parties going on around as well. And then the other new one for this year that's sponsored by Talisker Club is our Eastern Summit County Leaderboard. And what we've realized is even though it's called Live PC, Give PC, really it's about the greater Summit County and the greater Wasatch back and how all of these nonprofits interact, right? If you're going out to the Uintas to go hiking, you're in Eastern Summit County. And so how do we benefit some of the nonprofit organizations in Eastern Summit County today as well?
Now, if you want to leverage your contributions during the day, as we look at the leaderboards, are there certain hours that certain kinds of contributions will get matched?
Yeah, I'll talk about two that Park City Mountain through Vail Epic Promise are sponsoring. So this year, a year-over-year repeat sponsorship challenge. So if you gave last year and you give this year, we'll add an extra $10 to that donation. And then we're also proud to sponsor two power hours today where we'll top off donations made in that hour for an additional $10. Now, we aren't sharing when those power hours are, so check your email, check social, and that's another way to boost your donation.
And listen to KPCW all day, and you'll find out when those power hours are.
We're going to be announcing those.
I think we're on and off all day today, so I think you'll hear from our crew on your shows all throughout the day. So
and aren't there other? I mean, that's an important match, but are there other matches that we'll be able to see by looking at the website? How does that work?
Yeah, so every single organization has the opportunity to secure matches and offer them, and so there are little icons on their cards that say matches happening now, and so you can look there and find out what's going on. Example, the Schools and Teams Club Leaderboard that's sponsored by Whedon Ranch, right? I know that Park City Basketball has had some of their parents are sponsoring a match for anybody who donates to them. I saw that on this morning when I logged on to make some donations. So you'll see different places throughout the day, different matches pop up. So just keep logging back in. Treat it like your doom scroll on Instagram today and go in there and just doom scroll Live PC, Give PC all day and donate.
And you can doom scroll to find out whether there are matches, but you can also doom scroll to see if your favorite not-for-profit is gaining on the leaderboard.
That is correct.
Okay. And again, with respect to, we talked about the main leaderboard. With respect to some of the other leaderboards that you were just talking about, Brandy, what are the implications for the people who finished, for the organizations that finished first or second?
Yeah, they get prize money, right? And so first, second, prize money that comes to their organization. And, you know, they get pride, right? A lot of this day is about exposing these smaller nonprofits and different groups to new donor bases, introducing them to the community so they see what's going on, and being able to have bragging rights going into the next year.
Okay, and with respect to changes this year, we talked about how many participants we have this year. This year in the 140s, what was it last year? Do you remember?
It was in the 130s.
It was 130s, yeah. And then, does anybody remember what last year's total number of participants was?
Oh, I should have.
I'm stumping the
you
expert
are.
Panel.
You're stumping the expert
That's it.
Panel.
It's my quantitative obsession. Okay. the goal for this year in terms of unique donors now is 5
is 7 hold on.
7,000.
I'm going to read it
because
I want to make sure that I don't mess it up. It's 7,150 donors and $5.15 million.
We can
That's
do it.
The goal.
I think we can do
That's
it.
That's it.
I think we can
this
do it.
This community does amazing things every day. I know they can do it.
Okay. Anything else that we need to touch on before we go?
I just want to say thank you to KPCW for supporting Live PC, Give PC, and big thanks to Park City Mountain and their whole crew for supporting Live PC, Give PC as well.
And let me ask you this. What does a unicorn eat?
Money.
They also eat Chomp's donuts.
Yes.
So we've been firing her on donuts all day today.
Okay. Listen, we've been speaking with Brandy Connolly, Deidre Walsh, and Rebecca Blanchette or Blanquette?
Blanchette.
Blanchette. Also known as the Live PC, Give PC Unicorn. Guys, thanks for spending time with us this morning. Good luck on Live PC, Give PC Day. We'll be looking for people jumping up and down on the sidewalk all day today.
That's right.
All right.
Thanks, Roger.
We'll be right back.